This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I am unashamed. What about you?
So it's Ladies' Day on Unashamed Podcast.
Or as I would put it, strange creatures. Women are strange creatures.
I want you to know it's somebody looking at you and then saying women are strange characters or creatures. I don't know if they'd believe you.
Perfect normalcy is scary to people.
Well, you know, I love it when Dad will say, like, about Gordon or somebody, you know, he's got a look about him.
Oh, yeah.
And then I love it because people look back at Dad like, you got a look about you.
Yeah, and you know, when he preaches, I know I met somebody that did know Duck Dynasty, not familiar, but they were there that day, and I heard him say, is that the preacher?
Well, you look at Gordon and you know, not only is it a little weird, but he ain't from around here.
That's right. Well, one thing is,
Florida.
He's got a giant head. I mean, like, birds could be attracted to that head. It's just, you know, I don't know if it's because he's got a big brain in there or not. He is pretty smart. But
pretty good sized brain.
And he's working on our new book.
Sure is.
Yeah, and it's really good, you said. You've been reading some of it. That's excellent. So, babe, this is your first, this is Lisa's first time on Unashamed.
First time.
Are you excited about it?
Yeah.
You're sitting in Jace's seat. So.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, goodness gracious.
That means you're going to have to, so I asked Lisa.
Do I have to talk stock market if I sit right
you
here?
Yes, talk stock market, and you have to interrupt Dad as much as possible. That's the role you have to play. I asked Lisa about it. She said, I said, well, have you ever listened to the podcast? She said, well, I did a time or two, but it's so hard listening to Jace ramble on.
And interrupt.
And interrupt. Yeah. That's what he does.
Not that Phil is never interrupted, but.
Well, look, Mom, you'll be, there's a woman named Grace from Canada, a listener, and she sent a note I read last time Jace was here. It said, Jace does interrupt some, but you got to understand, it's just the love of Jesus that flows out. He just can't stop it from coming out. That was Grace's take.
If only she knew that he has been arguing with me since he was 3 years old.
Y'all,
I would like for her to hear some of that.
Well, we might need to hear some of that, especially since he's not
here. Just put us together.
You know, say what you want to about old Jace. He is one godly man. He really is.
He is. Oh, yeah.
He's great.
He's a straight arrow. There's no doubt about that.
But the Bible should have said more words about arguments.
Have nothing to do with foolish arguments. What about that verse, Mom?
Yeah, I need to blow stupid that up. Genealogy. Put it on his wall.
Mom, you know, he said, Mom, that the reason that you and he didn't get along was because you didn't get his humor for all his whole childhood.
Nobody got that humor.
Because it was just joking, and you just didn't.
Oh, yeah, he was. I'm sure he was. No, he just looked at me and said, I'm just going to live my life aggravating her and arguing with her.
He still does. So I want y'all to start today. I wanted y'all to basically give our audience, because Mom's been on a couple times, but usually it's been more male. So we're balanced. We're fair and balanced today. So I want to hear about what it's like being a Robertson from the women's side, because our audience totally gets it from the male side, because they get it every time they listen to podcasts. But I want them to hear what's it like to be a Robertson. Now, you weren't, I mean, both of you came in young, so you basically grew up, because y'all were, I mean, you were what, 16 when we first got together? Actually, you were 15 when we first started
15,
dating.
Yeah.
And you were about 14 when you first started running with Dad, right?
That's correct.
So basically, y'all have kind of come into this family, and I've been in it for most of your lives. So what's it like being Robertson? Let the audience know.
And I've been a Robertson twice as long as I was a Gibson, because I've been married 36 years now.
Yep. And Gibson, by the way, Jimmy Redd is a Gibson. He's Lisa's nephew, along with a few others out here in the Wild Wild West.
That's exactly
right. Far from the truth.
Let's that could see. Be a whole podcast, just it what it's be. Like to be Gibson.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I don't want to be
and Miller.
And Miller, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, those are two combinations.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what it's like to be a Robertson.
Well, tell about when you first
misunderstood.
Came
in. not appreciated. Not listened to. That's right, Kay.
What was Dad's rule? Remember for when you first came in, when we got together the second time and we got married, what was Dad's rule about women? Because you were the first one, so.
Well, he said you gotta convert them or cull them. And I didn't want to be called.
She didn't want to be called. I'd already called her once, you know, one time, so she didn't want to be called again, which is pretty funny. What about you, Mom?
Oh. You ready for me to really talk about that?
I am.
Okay.
I want to hear it. Especially well, back when it all first started, because you kind of, your family, I don't know, you weren't rich by any standard, but you had some means. You
we were the richest people in our town.
Well, there you go. Of what, 300 people?
200. Well, we had the only.
I guess that's better than the other 194.
And guess what? We had the biggest store, hardware store, grocery store, and all that. So I didn't act like a little rich girl, though, even though I was that. I didn't want to be like that. And that's what attracted me to him because, well, you know, not only was he good looking, you know, he didn't have all this, but he, I just liked his look. Then I found out he hunted, he fished. That was just like my daddy, and I love that about my daddy. And I would help him clean everything, the doves, the quail, the squirrels, I held the legs and all that. So I liked that man, that kind of man.
Pioneer man, right?
And I, yes, he was a pioneer. And my mama wanted me to date all these other boys, but, oh, they were too nice, if you know what I mean. And, I mean, I said, I can open my own door. You don't have to do that. You're just wasting time. I'm ready to go. So, you know, I that was just me. I didn't care for all that. And I didn't get it with this one.
And this was the early 60s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the time period we're talking about. So you still had sort of the chivalrous gentleman and all that, but Dad was not that, right? He was more just kind of the woodsman or...
Yeah, I like that about him. He's good looking. And I did, you know, I'd like football to this day.
So what was your first date with Dad? Do you remember it?
Well, somebody else set it up. That's what's funny. A girl that was an upperclassman decided that we'd make a cute couple. So she told me to walk him off the field that he wanted me to. And he told Phil that I wanted him to walk off with me on the football field. That's how we got together.
So you were a cheerleader?
I was a cheerleader.
And he was a quarterback.
That's right. Yeah. Good, too. He was very good. And so that's how we started, and then it just kept going. But see, when we first dated, I know he won't remember this, right? But we first dated after that meeting and all that. Then he broke up with me in duck season. Our hunting season, because he said I would interfere with his time. So I
just
thought,
being honest, I guess.
Yeah, that was it. So I was like, okay, now I really, you know, think about it. I want to marry you, and you're breaking up with me because I'm interfering with your hunting season. I should have got some clues there, but so we were not together, and we both. And then he just lied because he dated somebody else, not regularly, but one or two or three women. Girls. And then I had two or three, four boy dates. But, I mean, I knew he was a woman, but I was like, back then the girls didn't chase the boys. You waited, you know? And
that
when
was,
my...
Again, that was part of the era of that time, right?
So when, in May, when my daddy died...
And you were 14?
Yes, and it was in May, middle of May. And so a lot of my friends and other people came to a lot of young people were there at the funeral, and I saw him at the funeral. So then after the funeral, I saw him. He walked up to me, and I don't know, you know, he said he was sorry about my dad, and then he just said, "You want to go out?" Well, I said, "Of course I do." So, you know, so that hookup, then we never were apart again.
Yeah. I tell y'all stories, Sam, because I've got a picture that I found somewhere of that era. You know, you're about that age. It may not be exactly 14, but, you know, 15, yeah. 17, whatever.
Sitting by a car. Yeah, you're sitting on the hood, and he's standing by the
leaning
car.
Leaning back against the car. And so I love telling that story about y'all because it also kind of came out of, obviously, a very painful part of your life. And then I tell the story about your mom kind of went off the deep end. So then you really just...
Then we were dating at the same time.
Yeah,
me
right.
and my mom.
I know. And she wasn't exactly...
And I got home earlier than her.
Yeah, she wasn't exactly bringing in the best people either, right? I mean,
no, she wound up with being married a little while to a nice guy that was nice to me. But it was just, I was more in her, you know, she just wanted to move on with her in her new life. And so I looked at Phil as a replacement for my dad because he was a hunter and fisherman that he was, and also as a protector. I knew that no matter what, like the cowboy days, he would keep me from being killed.
Right.
Or being hurt.
Yeah.
So, but then what happened was when we went to Tech, of course, we had Alan on the way. So there I was at 16 pregnant.
Yeah.
And then we go to Tech and I turned
17.
And Dad
was just starting at Tech. He was 18, right?
Yeah.
Just starting to.
So I was pregnant with you. So I had you in January. And, you know, there it was, a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old or 19, whatever he was. Raising a baby, and I said, well, the way I look at it, I never was one to keep little children or do all that because I always had baby cats, baby dogs, baby sheep, everything, lambs. You know, I took care of animals. So I said, well, how different could it be to take care of you and a little baby kitten? So, you know, I would rock you and hold you. But, I mean, that's how dumb I was about being a mother.
I'm glad you did, I guess. I'm still here, so you did something right.
Well, you know that, you know, I told you that I would bring that little black and white TV in your room. You're in the baby bed. And I tell you every time we're watching the Dallas Cowboys, and he would just jump up and down and clap his hands. And I did that for 4 years.
You're the reason I've been a Cowboy.
That's right. And that he learned, and all he would say, if I said football, he said Cowboys. He said Cowboys.
Like flash memories. Unfortunately, they're usually of like, because I was a lot of accidents when I was a little bitty boy. I remember some deer antlers fell on my head. I fell one time and hit the corner of the car, and then big old wide things when you open the door and just split this eyebrow. But I can remember it. I guess it's because of the pain or trauma. But so I have these like flash memories of when I'm like three or four years old.
Every one of those, I took you to the doctor and you got treated.
Yeah. You took care of me. Just like a good kitten, I guess.
Yeah, a good little puppy dog.
get them to the
vet. I think that's why you're obedient now. I mean, you're just, you know, like a good dog.
That's right. You trained me well. So, Lisa, I told the story about one of our first dates. When we went to the fish market, and they didn't take the fish. Mm-hmm. So I told that story on the podcast recently. But tell about the story of our actual first date and how that came to be. We tell it all the time when we go speak. Before we do that, let's take a quick break. So I don't know if the ladies will agree to this, but the men on here talk about it all the time. One of the worst things about getting older is aches and pains. Yeah. Is that true for you, babe?
Yeah. I'm almost the double nickels. I will be in January.
And the aches and pains have added. So the reason why it happens is because of inflammation. Basically, that's where you get these joint aches and knees and all this stuff. And so the product we've been using, Dad and I have been on it, and Lisa's been taking it too. So Omega XL is the name of it. And basically, it neutralizes inflammation that causes these stiff joints and muscles. And it works, Dad. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, I hardly ever take ibuprofen, right, baby? And I took it every day before. So it's a lot better for your body, too, because this is all natural. From the pristine waters of New Zealand, these muscles that they get. So if you got some aches and pains, you really need to try it. I'm telling you, it works. Omega XL. If you go there, omegaxl.com/Phil, you're going to get a second bottle free. So you buy a bottle, get a second bottle free. This will give you a couple of months there to be able to try it. omegaxl.com/Phil, or you can call them 800-844-4888. That's 800-844-4888.
In the old days, that's what we'll call it. RK calls it the olden days.
Thank you.
This would have been early 80s is the time frame, 81, 82.
Yeah, we would drive around through McDonald's, in and out of the parking lot of McDonald's. And so I was driving through one night, and I saw my cousin. And
Bubba. Remember Big Bubba?
Yeah, I do.
And so he stopped me, and I was talking to him. And I had already met Alan when I was in the sixth grade. And fell in love with him, I think, then. But whenever I saw him and I was in the 10th grade, I fell in love all over again. But so I see Bubba, and he pulls me over, and we start talking, and then a head comes in my window, and it was Alan. And he said, "Wow." So... what I think is, wow means you filled out.
Yeah, it's exactly what it means. It's redneck for you filled out. It's,
wow.
Yeah, it's redneck language.
Because he hadn't seen me since I was in the sixth grade.
She was a little scrawny thing when she used to traipse around after me in middle school, and all of a sudden I was like, whoa, you know, there's been some growth here.
Yeah. So he said, "Well, hey, when are we going out?" And I said, "Well, whenever you ask." So he said, "Okay, let's go out tomorrow." I was, okay. He said, "Well, you want to meet me here?"
That was the first sign.
At the drive-thru?
Yeah, at the drive-thru.
That was the first sign of trouble.
My mother was not.
Most people meet at the drive-thru, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't.
No, y'all met at the drive-in, probably.
I haven't been to a drive-thru in so long.
And that's where I've met my wife.
So, what was funny is my mother didn't like that idea that we were going on a
date.
Which
she shouldn't have. I was terrible.
And we were meeting at McDonald's.
I wasn't, by the way, so the audience knows, which she's fixing to fill you in, but I wasn't of the best character. This was during the prodigal era we've talked about before.
Yeah. So yeah, I met you there.
Everybody has to realize this is all pre-conversion for
that's
everybody
right.
involved.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So I met you there, and... you had two of my cousins with you that night.
Bubba and
Mike.
And Tracy.
Which is a normal date.
No, I think it was Mike.
No, it was Tracy.
A normal date. You bring a couple of cousins, you know.
It was her cousins. I've never heard of that. Yeah.
Well, it was like a double date, but it was
just two guys.
Well, they were brothers.
Well, that's what I said. "What? Why'd you bring them?" And he said, "It's a double date." I'm like, but they're boys.
But they had access to alcohol and marijuana. That was why they were there.
Yeah, that's right.
Which Lisa was introduced to that world.
And
that's a great thing.
Yeah, was not part of that, or had not been part of that yet. And so by the end of the night, our date ended, and we're in a strip club parking lot.
We're in front of the Shalar Lounge over in Monroe.
In Monroe.
It used to be over there on 18th Street, the Shalar. It was a strip. There was the only strip club that's ever been in Monroe, I think.
Yeah.
So that's where we were.
I'm not familiar with that.
No,
I've never heard this story. I didn't
did
know
you
we
not
got
read
off.
Our book, Phil?
I don't know whether we got off on the right foot or not here.
No, trust me, we did not.
No, we did not. That's
we
right.
We did correct it. But
We ended that night with me and Alan on the back seat, and him passed out, and I'm just in the, you know, in the parking lot of this strip club, and then both my cousins, Mike and Bubba, are in the strip club.
Because we weren't old enough to go.
That sounds like a nightmare to me.
It was a nightmare. It was terrible, and so
it was. And you would think that would have been the worst, but it wasn't. It got worse.
So we were together a few months. And this was the time, Dad, I had had other girlfriends and other issues. And one of my former girlfriends before Lisa's dad came down and confronted y'all about me and my behavior. And it was all true, but I lied, of course, about it. And finally,
you were good at that.
Oh, I was the perfect little liar, no doubt about it. And I was living a double life. You know what I mean? I tried to look good in church and all that stuff, but I wasn't. I was terrible. And I always look at it from y'all's perspective, that because Jace is always like, "Oh, they just never wanted to look at it." I said, but parents never do. Like, you love your children, you just wouldn't think they'd be capable of what they're doing, and yet you get into it sometimes. This is the evil one. He just had my heart, and I was serving him.
Yeah.
And one of my greatest regrets, and I say it all the time with Lisa, is that when I met her, she was a good girl. I mean, she had had, you know what, we talked about a lot on the podcast, you being molested. So she had all that past stuff that affected who she was, but I'm the one that corrupted her. I'm the one that led her down the bad path. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting because all these years later, after being married so long and us, you know, obviously when I came back to the Lord, I reached out to Lisa and it started the process that's our whole life now. But Dad set me down in this era and just said, because I was 17, Lisa and I had been together a little while. And of course, she was just in love with me, but she was just a girl to me. I didn't feel about her the same way. And Dad was like, you got to either straighten up or hit the road. You know, he gave me a clear choice, you know, which looking back on it, I tell people all the time, that was a love speech. Because mm-hmm. what happened was, you knew the path I was on. Not only was I going to crash and burn, but I was going to take down brothers and the rest of the family. I mean, you had to do the right thing. And you did it. Problem was, I wasn't ready. So I was defiant. And so I left. And left in a bad way. And of course, that is when I ditched Lisa at the same time. And then so her life went into a tailspin from there.
You weren't defiant to me. You were defiant to what I said, but you didn't show it. You
no.
were like, well.
That's yeah. right. Yeah. Well, and because I respected you, and I also knew that deep down you were right.
Yeah.
You know, when you're living the double life, you know it's wrong.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it. I mean, it's not like you're like, oh, no, this is fine. Because why are you doing it in secret? It's like you described somebody going out stealing horses. Why do they do it at night? You know, you can claim, well, I want to live my life the way I want to live it, but why are you being so secretive about it? Because you know.
You try to justify it.
You do.
But even your conscience tells you it's still wrong.
So one of the things I want to talk about, because I think it's interesting, something that we share together is that, and I hadn't thought about it till y'all were going to be on, is that, so obviously both of us went into our relationship with a lot of baggage, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Dad had a 10-year run there of not being a Christian, built up a lot of...
The devil.
The devil, that's right, being
that's
in control.
That's what I called him.
So, but it was interesting because I was doing the math, and that was about 12 years from when you guys first got together. And so for Lisa and I, it was about 15 years after we had been together, that then it was just a crash and burn. I mean, for y'all
yeah.
back in that day, and then for us, 15 years in ours. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about that because it's interesting that it seems to be sometimes you can build something up through the years. And I know there's a lot of couples and people that are listening that are probably going through something like that right now
oh, yeah.
or about to. And so I want to give them some hope as
to. There's a mighty throng of them going through stuff like yeah. this.
Exactly. And it, a lot of times, it's no magical year, but you get into that, you've been together a few years and you built up a lot of bad habits, and then it turns into conflict. And so I can remember that because in our case, I was there as a boy when y'all were going through it. But then later, Lisa and I go through almost the exact same thing as you guys. So,
it was her more. And in my case, it was him. Not that we were perfect,
no.
but, you
right.
know, the main ones that did the things.
Think about it, Al. When you get right down to it, the entire human race goes through it.
Absolutely.
When you get old enough to be accountable.
Right.
And you begin to defy God and the sinning starts, everybody goes through that.
That's right.
Which is why I believe this book that's in front of me, because it tells us that.
That's exactly right.
So we already have the report here. It is written.
Right.
All have sinned, you know, they've none good doing good. They all turned away. Well, every last one of them,
yep.
worldwide. And a lot of them don't make the comeback, but
well, and that's
a percentage of them do.
That's what you're trying to impress upon people, is the longer you stay in that frame of mind and lifestyle, the longer bad stuff then attaches to you and how you operate, and the more damage it causes, usually in your relationship.
The sad part is most, once they're cut off,
yeah.
a lot of them don't know God. They don't know where to go. They don't know where to look. They're in the rehab. They're in the prison. They're yeah. in this. They're in that. the devastation of that, the drugs, they yep. just keep it. It's just a rolling thunder.
Right.
And the only way out is the one each of us found.
Right.
Which it is way better.
Oh. Yeah. I would say that's for
well,
sure.
Well, and I think, too, the longer you're in it, the more Satan's got his claws into you. And he continues to tell you that you're too bad, that, you know, there is no salvation for that.
Yep.
And that nobody could love you like you are.
You're not worth anything.
That's exactly right. So I think the longer you're in it, that's more of that detrimental thing that happens, is that because, like as you've said before, sin progresses.
Yep.
And so you get worse and worse and worse. And then I think you justify it. You think what you're doing is okay. You're not as bad as the guy next door, you know.
Phil was as bad or worse than the guy next door.
But he didn't feel like he was.
Oh, no.
You know, now.
Hang on, Dad. Let's take another break. So, Mom, I don't know if you ever got these on the bed, but I gave you some Bowl and Branch sheets.
Oh, yeah.
Have you tried
yeah,
them?
Yeah, they're great.
So tell me what you think about them.
Well, they're good.
Now, I bet you didn't know this. Bowl and Branch, you know how soft and comfortable they are, but did you know that three presidents sleep on Bowl and Branch sheets?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you're like the president and the first lady now sleeping on Bowl and Branch sheets. That's how good they are. But we love them. Lisa and I love them.
Yeah.
We had already bought them before they were ever a sponsor on the show.
Uh-huh.
And we love them. We use them on our beds as well. Basically, what they say is they're $1,000 quality, but a fraction of the price. And I would say that's true. You can try them for a month risk-free. So if you don't like them, you can send them back. But trust me, you won't send them back. Right now, you get $50 off any sheet set at bowlandbranch.com if you use the promo code Robertson. So it's bowl, B-O-L-L, and branch.com, promo code Robertson, $50 off. Check these guys out. Restrictions may apply, but see bowlandbranch.com for all the details.
Now, Al, it's and it's biblical, but interesting little text here. Let's see. Listen to this one. What benefit did you reap at that time from the things you are now ashamed of?
Yeah.
Which is a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
But now that you have been set free from sin and have become slaves to God, the benefit you reap leads to holiness, and the result is eternal life. For the wages of sin is death. Right. So it's a life or death. We are speaking about life yeah. and death moments.
That's exactly right.
In our past.
That's exactly right. And that's why you tell your story, which becomes Jesus' story, as a cautionary tale for everybody else, because you don't want people to go through what you went through. Why would you want people to suffer
you,
like that?
That shows you the way God works, because you can see, you know, like for me, staying 10 years through that, mm-hmm. it was like I said, I know what war's like.
Yeah.
Because I lived with him for 10 years as a, you know, devil person. And so, I mean, you know, other people would say, how did you do that? See, they want to know
sure.
how it started, where it was, and what happened at the end. Because they said, obviously, y'all are together and happy family, and we are. But they told me they want to hear the bad and the good and the ugly, right. every bit of it.
Right.
So I think when we do that, then they see how God works. And especially, like in my case, by staying. Because my family said, don't stay. His family told me, don't stay with him. I mean, he's too mean, he's too bad, and all that. Well, I had to set on the words of my grandmother about not leaving my marriage. I was set that it was supposed to be. And she said, you won't ever get a divorce because you're going to stay married. So I thought I would stay married.
Yeah.
And then 9 years into it, or maybe right at the nearly the 10 mark, you know, he kicked us all out.
Yep.
Thank you. But so we got in our little Volkswagen, three boys.
Took off to West Monroe.
Yep. And all the stuff we could carry in that Volkswagen. Thank you.
But what's ironic, Mom, is that a few months after that, or I don't know the time frame, but when Dad came back, mm-hmm. you basically gave him the same choice he gave me.
That's right.
All those years later, it's like, I love you, I want you in the family, but you can't, it's not going to work with you the way you are.
Repentance comes slow to some.
Exactly.
By the way, just so y'all will know, that was, and you'll laugh at this, but it's a true statement, that was the fastest 74 years I've ever spent on planet Earth.
And this, the only
this
74.
Is how long it seems this took.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It went, whew, and now I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
I'm 74 years old. My next marker is 80.
Yeah.
Well, the average life expectancy for a male in these United States is 77. I'm like, let's see, I'm 74.
You got 5,
76. I said, woo.
It goes by quick.
Oh, Al, I remember when you were a little boy down at Louisiana Tech, but now your whiskers are gray like mine, dude.
Well, I'm an old fart. You know, there's no doubt about it. Well, so you think about it, though, Mom, you're right. When that choice is then made, things change. And so for the audience, a lot of times I think people bail too early.
All right.
Because they're, and because here's what happens. You go into another relationship, you're like, well, this, I married the wrong person. You know, obviously we're fighting, we're this, we're that, this happened, someone had an affair. And so this, like, so you marry someone else, but typically then you have the same problems because people are still people. Mm-hmm. And so, like, then sometimes a third marriage or a fourth marriage. And so people have to look inwardly as to how did this, where are we? Why is this happening? What's the atmosphere? Because I always tell people, nobody stands in front of a preacher and says, I do, thinking that they want to get a divorce. I mean, that moment they're thinking, I want to be with this person the rest of my life. I mean, that's why I'm standing here. That's why I'm saying the I do's. That's why I'm giving my vow.
Yep. Or that they want to have an affair.
But that's right. Nobody's imagining that in that moment. So the evil one is the one setting the traps and for these things we don't have. And like Dad said, people feel like they have an unfillable hole. And I want you to talk about that, because describe a little bit kind of what happened with us. You don't have to give the whole deal, but just kind of where we wound up. Because for them, it was 12-year mark. For us, it was 15.
Well, we had been married for 15 years, but also at the 5-year mark, we kind of had a...
kind of a near miss.
A near miss.
Affair. It's just kind of an emotional connection you made with this person.
And that should have sent us to a counselor.
Yeah.
We should have dealt with that then. And for all the listeners out there, you know, if there is something that's a near miss, you know, somebody's emotionally involved with someone else, please see a counselor. There's a reason why, you know, and you need to get to the bottom of that. But for us, we'd been married 15 years. Our girls were, I think, 10 and 12, right around in that age.
Yep.
And I was working for Duck Commander, and an old boyfriend called that I had dated back in high school. And so, as they say, small talk led to bigger talk and, you know, intimate talk and things of that nature. So I had an affair for 14 months. And what is ironic about a person who is having an affair is that the one person they don't want to hurt is the person that they're hurting, and that's their spouse. I mean, I never wanted to hurt you, but it was all about the darkness that was inside of me. I know that in his heart, Phil didn't want to hurt Kay either, you know?
That's right.
Well, he didn't want nobody else to get me, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I used to drive down the road during this 14-month period, and I would pray for God to open a door. Just open a door. Just, you know, let me off of this roller coaster. And it was always honesty. Every single time, the door that he would open would be honesty. So I had to tell the truth. But I had not told the truth since I was 7 years old when I started being molested. You know, I couldn't tell anybody what was happening to me then.
And we believe it built, and this wasn't even your fault. It was a 7-year-old kid. But someone else's sin against her was building up this, like, dishonesty thing that would come out all these years later. Let's take a quick break. So one of the things that's happened with the increased use of internet because of coronavirus, especially, you know, people having to do all their work from home, Zooms, all this stuff, is that it has brought out the cyber thieves and, of course, a lot of the bad stuff. You know, it's like we talk about good and evil on the podcast, and it's the same thing. You got good stuff. People are working. They're hearing this podcast, but then you got the evil one, right? So one of the things that's been happening is these cyber thieves can go online and hack into wherever the title to your home is and basically steal your home title without you knowing it. And what they
that's
do is
mean.
It's terrible. They borrow a bunch of money against it, and then somebody's coming to evict you, and you don't even know you don't own your home anymore. So it's a very serious crime, and we talk about it quite a bit on the podcast. Here's what you do to check it out. Go to HometitleLock.com. You register your address and make sure you're not already a victim. And if you're not, then these guys are going to be able to protect that where the thieves can't get in and get it. So it's HometitleLock.com. Use the code RADIO. They're going to give you the first month free, 30 free days. It's HometitleLock.com, code RADIO.
And so I really couldn't tell anybody then. And then I really couldn't tell anybody with this either. All of my friends were Christians. So I really, you know, couldn't talk to anybody about it. But I know that the honesty part, God kept saying, you got to be honest. But I thought, if I'm honest, then Alan's going to know what I've been doing. And it's going to hurt him.
And not only that, after the near miss, I had told you back then, if you ever do anything like this again, you're out of it. This marriage is over. So I had that kind of looming over her, too. You know, just the idea is, if she tells the truth now, it's over. I've already said it out loud.
But I also thought, you know, you wouldn't love me right. if I told the truth, you know? And, you know, on the night that I did tell the truth, we call it truth vomit, because you had found out about it and found phone records and...
Oh, and I was like a CIA.
He was a waterboarder.
I mean, you talk about get to the bottom of the truth, because I knew now I had the proof, but she was holding on to it so tight. She just did not want to say the words, but I was not going to leave there without hearing truth that night.
And I told him, I said, if I tell you what's been going on, you won't love me. You'll leave me. And he said, if you don't tell me the truth, you know, I'm leaving. And so as I vomited up the truth.
And once you got going.
I told it all. You know, I just.
I tell people, Dad, it's Psalm 51. You remember when David, when he finally got smoked out about Bathsheba? You read Psalm 51, it's just him going, bleh. I mean, I was terrible. I couldn't have even in the womb, I had to be a sinner because I'm so bad. You know, it's just when someone gets to that point of truth. Then it comes out. But look, the dam has to break before you can get to any kind of healing or reconciliation. If you're not going to be truthful and honest, we can't find forgiveness. Go ahead.
But you know, like I was talking about a while ago, you find a way to justify it. And I did. I found a way to justify what I was doing. But in that moment when it all came out and whenever I heard myself say the things that I'd been doing, and I looked in the mirror and I thought, how did I get here? Yeah. Like, where did I go so wrong at? Because you really don't recognize who you are whenever you take a really long look at yourself in the mirror whenever you've been in these sinful situations. And you go, who am I? How did I get there? And where did I fall off the track? But also at the same time, whenever I said it, whenever I was honest, it was like a weight was lifted off of me because I no longer had to be, running from the truth and denying the truth. And waiting for the other shoe to drop, right, so to speak.
Did you tell me that a double life is so exhausting?
It is.
You know, because you're constantly trying to keep this one from knowing what that is about, and it's exhausting.
Well, and the lies, you don't know who you've told what to cover up, you know, one lie or another lie. So, you know, sometimes you get those mixed up also. But
what's ironic is Lisa felt relief from telling the truth. I felt relief from finally hearing the truth, because I thought I was going crazy all this time, because she's not saying she's doing it. I would have different periods where I thought, well, maybe she's not. Maybe I'm just missing this whole boat here. And so, like, we were doing that dance for so long. So I felt relief just like she did. What was interesting was I didn't think we would stay married.
Yeah.
But then once a person has finally come clean, just like Dad did too,
yeah,
then all of a sudden you're open to something new.
You, when Jesus told those people that were trying to kill him, he says, you belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desire. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of all lies.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at that, that's pretty powerful.
That's very powerful.
He's a very powerful being.
He is. And once you buy into the deceit, then you're blinded.
And he just keeps it going.
Yeah, just like Lisa was describing.
Now you've heard living the lie. I mean, that's exactly right. That's him right there.
So
tell
the audience what you did in that moment. Like, once you vomited that truth out, and I'm just kind of numb and, you know, but relieved, tell them what you did.
I went out into the backyard and laid down on the grass. And I told Alan, if I could have, I would have dug a hole, because that was how low that I was feeling. But at that point, I said, you know, I thought I had a relationship with God. I thought I knew who he was. I thought that I was a Christian at that point. But I wasn't. And so I just looked up. I'm laying in the grass, and I just look up, and I'm like, God, if you're out there, I don't know that I even believe that you are. I don't even know that I believe in you or anything about this. But at this moment, I need you. And so if you're out there, if you are, you know, who I've heard that you are, would you please come and rescue me? And what's amazing is at that point, I felt that. I felt that at that point God came, and I think it was because of the openness that I had towards him, because I had never had an open heart to God before. But after spilling all of that out, I finally had an open heart to God, and he came, and I really felt that. And then I had a desire to learn more about the Bible, who he was, what my role was, what I was supposed to do. And that was after my heart was opened.
So let's take one last break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
And Mom, I want you to tell the story, because we've shared our three desperate moments. This is why we wrote the book, Desperate Forgiveness, because when you get to that desperate place where there's nowhere else to go, that's when many times you finally turn to God, right? So the three of us told ours. Tell about the when you were in the bathroom at the worst of it.
Yeah.
And tell that, because to me, I think that's your desperate moment.
It was. And he was continually, you know, drinking. The only thing I can say good about this, he never quit working. He always supported me. But he was just getting worse, drinking, and he was actually had got hurt or something. He was laid off a little while from working offshore, and he was at the house. So that became horrible because he was just drunk at my house. Because usually his drunkenness is out at the parties and the other women, all that stuff. So I remember coming home, and he'd been there, and I was late. And it was because I think it was something with a car or something, you know, and I had to go by and pick y'all up because he would never go get his children from daycare. And so I came in, and then he just started on me because I was late that I was probably having an affair. And I just laughed almost because I thought, yeah, I've got so much time for an affair.
He was just projecting that onto you.
Oh, it was just like, and I was like, you know, I drive 40 minutes to work. I come back, I have to pick up my kids, usually I have to go to the store, then I come home and I cook a good supper. I mean, I do all this. And so that night, I don't know what happened, it just hit me, that he's just not going to change, you know. And I said myself to God in that bathroom when I was crying, I just said, I've stayed, I mean, at that time it's probably 9 years or nine and a half or something, and I said, I've stayed, I've been faithful, and now he's accusing me of being an adulterer, you know, and all that. I mean, it was just like, man, this is it. I mean, and that's when I was crying and crying. And, of course, since we were in a trailer and you can hear everything in the room next door, that's when I always talk about, I heard three sets of feet wearing their house shoes, and I knew it was the boys, and Alan said, Mama, don't cry anymore. He said, God's going to take care of you and us. And, you know, for that second, because right before that second, I said, if I had a bottle of pills right now, I would take them and I would just go to sleep and not have to worry about this anymore. And you know what else I thought? Then I hope he feels guilty to the day he dies. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And those memories.
By the way, that was the evil one. Knife in it on you now.
Now that's right. Correct.
Because to check out, right?
That's right.
So all four of us then, and that's the reason I want to talk about today on the podcast, because people respect us and love us, and we obviously share a lot about the Bible and a lot of good stuff. But I want people to know that all four of us have been in a super desperate place, and we all messed up as teenagers. We fell short, but God was always there until we were finally ready to say, God, we're ready, you know, to follow you. And that's why all four of us have spent our lives trying to help people and lead people to Christ.
That's correct.
You know, and so, but people need to know that, because there's a lot of desperate people out there. They're in the same place we were in, you know.
Peace of mind, it's rare.
It's very rare. And the only way you find it is through accepting Christ and following him, extending and receiving forgiveness, and then commitment to life change, because all four of us changed our lives, and that's what changed everything for us. But we remember the forgiveness. So, Mom, so recently, and we've told this before, but we just had Phyllis and Tony on, and we were talking about how that, you know, the night that we, you know, revealed to you guys that there may be a sister from that, right before that same era we're talking about, from this lifestyle, your reaction was not, you know, a lot of women that find out there's a 44-year-old daughter from your husband are not going to, that's not going to be received well. In Mom's case, she was like, oh, I've always wanted a daughter. You know?
I did. Yeah. She was actually a little upset with your dad.
Yeah. She was like, I've had this girl.
I always wanted a daughter.
And Dad's like, I didn't know. So, but what I loved about that, Mom, was that what that told me that night was that when you forgave Dad 44 years earlier, when he came, accepted Christ, started a new lifestyle, you forgave him, right? Same thing I did with Lisa. But you meant it. Because if you wouldn't have meant it, then even 45 years later, she would have been angry. Oh, this just, you lived that life. And she could have just set in on you, but she didn't, because she knows who you are now. And even 44 years that go by, and now in our case, Phyllis and Tony live here. We have a great relationship with her. She's a part of our family. She hunts with us. And so.
And she's just like him.
That's right. Oh, in so many ways. Yeah. The so more I'm around her, oh. She is so Robertson. I mean, it reminds me a lot of myself, too. No compassion. No, you know, she's.
Boy, the twists and turns of life. Uh-huh. Now, some of these people in the audience said, that's about the most low down, sorry bunch. But what can we say?
Without Christ, we're all low down.
Right. Hey, the truth's the light.
That's right.
Yeah. I want to say something, though, that I believe back when Phil and I had our stuff and all. I would go to church some because I did believe in God, but then I was ashamed though they'd find out about you, and you know that would just made it real hard for me because I was ashamed of that. But I think about now, this is what upsets me because even when we got back together, they did a thing more with Phil on. You know, trying to teach him how to become a Christian because he had lived so long in that life. And we had talks with both of us, but mostly it was with him. But nowadays, people have counselors. They have people that can help them that we didn't know who to call. You know, we just go to whoever helped us at church.
Right.
But now there's so many things offered to people to help them. And that's what messes me up so bad because I'll say, and they say, I'm separated or whatever they say. And I say, well, did you try to go to counseling? Because we can point you to the right direction and all that. And they'd just say, no, we didn't go to counseling. And I said, you don't understand. Everybody should give it a try.
That's right.
Some will work and some won't. But there is so much opportunity now to get help that we didn't know how to get help.
Yeah, and you just have to seek it and be humble and be honest and find it because people want to get, you know, help. So let me mention here at the end a few resources just that we've provided. If something we've said today has touched you, we've written about everything we talked about. Elise and I wrote A New Season and then Desperate Forgiveness, which is a follow-up. So if something has touched you from our story, what we told you, get those books because you can find some hope and healing. Happy, 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 which is Dad's first book, basically tells his life and conversion story. And then Mom and the Women of Duck Commander talks about a lot of what you talked about today. So those are great resources. If you know somebody that's going through something, pick one of those up and get it in their hands because it's going to help them. That's why we did it. And I also want to mention we got some new books coming up next year. Dad's working on one on cancel culture, which we've mentioned a couple of times, so be on the lookout for that one. And then Lisa and Mom are going to do a book, which I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. We're announcing for the first time. So we hadn't quite got the title for sure on it, but we're working on the ideas, and it's going to be a little bit about what we talked about today, how those stories have launched both of you into helping other women especially, but a lot of people. And there's so much in the Bible about that very thing, mm-hmm. which is powerful. So just want to encourage you on those. It's always good to have the ladies to visit the Unashamed. You know, our women's audience is really growing, Mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was a very male-dominated audience earlier.
Well, it's a miracle today because Phil and all of y'all can tell how I mispronounce words. Is that right?
Yeah.
You have butchered the English language.
I have. And listen, I'm telling you, it's all natural. I didn't even know I mess up. But on this one today, I don't think I've mispronounced one word, but I don't know.
Well, we might have to go back and check the video.
I have a duck gumbo waiting on us. I fixed it. I started on it last night, finished it up about 9:00. So it's been simmering for about 2 or 3 hours.
And, you know, Dad's cooking. You know, Mom used to do most of the cooking, but Dad does a lot of the cooking now.
Yeah, he does over half the cooking.
Yeah.
But one of my girls from my Bible study.
It doesn't bother your manhood.
No.
Hey, when I was having a little Bible study at my country kitchen, so I sent a girl down there to get something, and she come back, and she walked in there, and they said, "What is that smell?" And she said, "What are you talking about?" And they said, "You smell like some kind of Cajun gumbo or something." So she had just walked through the kitchen, mm-hmm. went back up to us on the little steps up to
there's not much better smell than a gumbo, especially a Ruby.
It will draw people from miles around.
Well, I say let's go eat some. So we'll see y'all next time.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.